ruling here last fall has been made that that is not the case. They refer to this actually as a manufacturing process. And then this is not permissible underneath the normal granting authority, but we'd have to go to the exception process. This, of course, can get very detailed and can be quite a problem to the counties, to the contractors in particular. We have...
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Day.
Are you coming here because of the result of the case over in Yamhill County? Is that why you're here?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Day, no, this was the one down in Klamath Falls.
Where's Yamhill County? They have a batch plant there, too, don't they?
Yes, sir. There's batch plants all over the state.
Wasn't that an issue?
No, the issue in Klamath Falls was when the...
I'm not talking about the issue in Klamath Falls. I'm talking about the issue over in Yamhill County.
I know nothing about that one, sir.
You know nothing about it?
No.
All right, Mr. Chairman, go ahead. Go ahead.
This proposal has the concurrence of the Association of Oregon Counties as well as the AGC. Now I think I'd let Mr. Salas address himself to the amendment that has been added in 237 that we weren't aware of until now.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Jack Salas, Chief Counsel to the Department of Transportation. A moment's explanation of the amendment proposed by the AOC and the Highway Division. The decision by LUBA indicated that although historically the counties and the Highway Division and the AGC had considered processing to include the manufacturing of asphalt and cement, that was not the interpretation they gave to the existing statute. Some of the counties picked this up earlier and took care of it in their plans, but about 21 of them merely referenced their conditional use permits for processing of aggregate to the statute, which means that they're bound by this decision and they will not be able to allow temporary plants at an aggregate source for the manufacturing of asphalt or concrete. Now referencing the proposed amendment that is contained on page 7 of the amendments to Senate Bill 237, beginning on line 15, I'm sort of confused by the first phrase that says if the operation was approved by the county, whether that was really what they intended to say, because that would indicate that you're referring to existing operations and whether you would have to have met this narrow criteria in approving an existing operation, which is, I don't think, what they intended, but that I'd have to, I'm speculating on that.
Senator Day?
We've got a lot of people to testify. Now, very basically, the heart of your testimony is the fact that you want to be able to keep the operation of processing with the mining of the aggregate. And that's, no matter which bill we address, you want to preserve that right. Is that the heart of your testimony?
That's one part of it, yes, sir.
What's the second part?
The second part is that in this proposed amendment, it says under a procedure requiring the identification and exhaustion of those resources occurring on or under soils of lesser agricultural capability. Aggregate is where you find it. And if you cannot find aggregate that is in a reasonable location where it's economically feasible to mine it, except on maybe class one or two agricultural soil, you would not be able to mine it under this provision if there were some other less highly ranked soil maybe 15 or 20 miles away. The hauling of aggregate is an expensive item in the use of it.
Yes, Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, I understand the hauling is an expensive item, and I also understand that all of that hauling is an expensive item to people who live in the area, the vineyards that are in the area, and that there's no provision and no balancing act right now that takes that we have to really look at that. So I guess I'm not nearly as sympathetic to your approach because that balancing act has not taken place in terms of the cost to whom, in terms of deciding which particular parcel ought to have a priority for developing and taking those resources.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Cohen.
Yeah.
I think what we're talking about here is allowing a balancing act to take effect. The provisions of this bill, I don't think, allow that. It requires the identification and exhaustion of a pit in less useful lands. It doesn't allow you to balance anything because you have to exhaust the pit in the less highly useful agricultural lands. And that's why I think that the language is overly restricted from what's intended. I agree that there has to be a balancing of equities in this situation.
Do you have another question, Senator? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Well, let's see. I'm going to probably not do justice to this name either. Art Heisenrider?
You did pretty well. Heisenrider.
Heisenrider.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is, Art Heisenrider. I'm the managing director of the Oregon Concrete and Aggregate Producers Association. We have no written testimony, but would like to explain a few reasons for our concern with the exemptions or limitations this legislation will place upon our industry. As citizens, we recognize the concern for the preservation of good farmlands, and at the same time, we have a responsibility to explain our concern for the present and the future aggregate resources in the state. Gravel is an important resource. Gravel is a non-renewable resource. As a witness before me testified, that it is where nature put it, not where the planner might have it. Now, in Goal 5, we were given some recognition and some assurance in the form of a peg to hang our hat on, that as a natural resource, one of the guidelines recognized that our concern was below the surface and that the operation of a gravel pit took place in three distinct stages. In other words, the present or the use of the land, it involved the land in three stages. Its original use, its interim use, and its second use. Our problem is that we're squeezed between those that say we can get the gravel, why don't you get the gravel out of the rivers? And then we're bothered by those that have the interest in the rivers that say don't get your gravel out of the rivers, get it off the uplands. Now, I want to point out that when we're looking for aggregate resources, we're looking for sources that have minimal topsoil or overburden, as we call it. It's a problem that even in a small 40-acre development for an aggregate resource, that you can run from, zero overburden, where the gravel is right on the surface, to 20, 30 feet away, maybe 15 feet of overburden, and then back to zero again, because it's the nature in the alluvial deposit that when it was placed there by the river, as the river shifted back and forth, that it left gouges of gravel, which were stream channels, and then it filled with the, in my mind, say, very high-quality topsoil. So we have a problem. We'd be particularly bothered and nervous if this particular bill passed on a review process. I should explain that since we have been working with county after county, jurisdiction after jurisdiction, inventory aggregate resources, identify them, designate them as mineral aggregate resources, that if this, if at review time, with the wording that the bill now has, I don't see any way that we could withstand the pressures of or defending what we'd have to in that case. The amendment that was proposed by the Highway Department just ahead of us is an amendment that we have already introduced, and it has passed in House Bill 2103. It is an amendment to a definition to surface mining. I might close by pointing out that the Surface Mining Act, there were some witnesses ahead that said, well, I think the grape orchard that said that there's just no way that you can do anything with that quarry or this or that. I've got to say that the only way you can dig the first shovel full of material on a new site today is it must have a reclamation plan that meets all the criteria. Apologize for not having testimony writing for you, but I heard of this morning, the hearing this morning. It's our responsibility to inform you of our concern. Any questions?
Senator Day?
Art and I have worked this over and tried to when they originally wrote the goals, is to accommodate the resource of aggregate and what have you. And I think the real issue there, though, is, however, if you have an aggregate resource and you're going to mine it in a particular area, is that the most desirable area, and it, you know, both from your standpoint as well as the land? And then if you mine it, are you also going to be allowed to run your processing plant in some cases? And I think that the mining might be all right, and it could conflict with the actual processing. And it one might be all right and not the other. And I'm really torn with this because I think there's a definite need for this resource available that's halfway, you know, not to add additional cost if we're looking at economic development. On the other hand, there can be people who are invested heavily in their properties, and all of a sudden you come along and start doing aggregate mining, and it completely detracts from them. And I'd like to have you address that a little bit, Art, Senator, more than just passing through, because I know you've tried like the devil to work particularly in land use.
Well, my response to that, Senator, and it's a very good question and point, one that we have to deal with at each and every zoning hearing we encounter, and that is that we have to remember here again in perspective that the mining of the aggregate is an interim process. It's not a permanent thing, as say would be a mine or even building a factory that would be continuing in operation. The life of the site really is gauged by the demand or the need of the market. For instance, in the last 2 or 3 years or since the recessionary period, these pits could last forever, it seems like, because we're not removing much gravel. The need is, as the need or the demand is there, the interim period of mining and then getting on to the reclamation will occur quicker. So that, I don't know if that explains, but I'm trying to make the point that we're an interim use, and the sooner we get in and out of that operation, the reclamation can proceed.
Would you address the issue of reclamation? Now, putting the overburden back, restoring the soil. How are you going about that right now? And as I understand the testimony preceding you, there was very little of that being done right now.
Well, the example of putting 1 foot of topsoil back where 15 feet or some such thing had been taken out, I really don't know anything about that. But I can say that in the case that was mentioned of the grape orchard, the quarry was there first in this instance, and it was in a rural area, not in an urbanized area. It was the best source of aggregate of crushed rock. There's a difference between the quarry operation and the gravel, both very controversial, I might say. But anyway, as the orchard moved in on it, it created that problem. And whether you're a wine drinker or a rock thrower, you know, I know that we're in a minority in the position, but I like wine and I like the use of the gravel for our development. Senator, just a difficult, all I want to do this evening on the record is, since we're not better prepared, I want to, you know, point out that we're very concerned with that type of review for our position. We need your help. In perspective, I think a survey that we made one time, less than 0.3% of the surface, put it in acres or square miles or whatever, 0.3% of the land in the state of Oregon is being mined. Now, in the pie, in the dividing up of the pie and slicing the portions out, where you're asking for this big a slice for residential, urban development, farming, everything, we're asking for 0.3%. Of which we will reclaim for a second use. Now, the trade-off there is really not as serious as it might sound, that we're taking away large blocks of food-producing farmland. That's all I have to say. That's
certain. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, sir. Val Barnes?
I'm Val Barnes. I own and operate Oaknell Golf Course out here in West Salem. And I just want to point out a couple things. This is short notice for us, too. And I and my wife, own and manage this little nine-hole golf course. Some of the people are gone here. But one thing I just want to point out, and maybe Mike Payette didn't point out, who was a former owner of this golf course, too, by the way, but there has been no course construction in the past 25 years in the state of Oregon. And I know basically the reason is because it's just, it's pretty difficult and some of the costs are probably prohibitive. But we are behind in this industry as far as expansion is concerned. For example, if I want to expand our golf course, there is 50 acres that is the twin of the 50 acres or so that I own. And that particular 50 acres would be ideal, and it's not being it's not being farmed at this particular time because it's worthless land. Basically, I know I've had three farmers that I've talked to that have tried to farm it over the last 50 years, and you can't get anything off it. So it's just sitting there, and it's exclusive farm use only. You know, it'd be nice to come in there and develop that and put some nice homes up in there and 10 acre tracts or something like that and have a real nice property. But it's just sitting there. It's an ugly place, and it detracts from my golf course, really. And that's farm use, land only. It is interesting that I could not expand in this without some much difficulty if I wanted to put in another nine holes there. In fact, I've even been told if my house or my pro shop and restaurant burns down, that I have a tough time replacing it. Now, I'm sure that probably wouldn't be true, but technically I might be in a difficult situation there.
Mr. Chairman, did I understand your testimony? You don't think there's been any new golf courses in the last 25 years? Did I understand you correctly?
There haven't been a development. There haven't been many developed. Okay. There might have been, just a...
Well, I can name you about four in this vicinity, but starting with McNary and Battle Creek and Senior Estates.
That's been... In the last 20-25 years, it's been at least 20-25 years since they've been developed.
I don't want to dispute, but I think you may find it's a little shorter than that, but that's all
right. Well, we're talking figures there that we're kind of throwing at me here, and I'm just kind of quoting what I hear. But anyway, I'm just pointing out that it would be difficult to expand in our area because of the fact that we do have... land that isn't very usable right around us, I'm about as close to being a farmer as anybody, and they call us short grass farmers. We have a lot of things that really we coincide with the farmers, and it's really exciting to be in this business. But to make it that difficult, I think it would be a really poor choice on our part. Thank you.
Les Glasser. Okay. Is Marvin Gloge? Yeah, you want to bring your troops up here?
Mr. Chairman, Marvin Gloge, representing the Association of Oregon County Planning Directors and Planning Director for Linn County. With me today is Russ Nebon, who's planning director for Marion County, and Bob Martin, who is planning director in Jefferson County. We're going to spend a few minutes addressing both Senate Bill 237 and 234, and we'll be offering to you a package for modifications of ORS 234. I'll hand that out to you in a few minutes. But I think first, we need to address Senate Bill 237. This is a very difficult kind of a bill to address, I guess, in the way that I would like to, in that Ex-Senator McPherson is a former Linn County Planning Commission chairman, and I'm planning director in the county. We've known each other for many years and have a great deal of respect for Hector's abilities, and also have had some opportunity to work with him in the development of this bill. We agree, I think, generally in concept that the idea for recognition of marginal or transitional land is very appropriate. However, in going through the bill in detail, I feel that there are a great number of technical flaws, and also that we find that it may run into substantial difficulty when you apply it to the system of acknowledged that counties are now achieving in terms of acknowledgement as it relates to these kinds of areas. Very recently, LCDC went through a process of reviewing and then rejecting a amendments to the creation of an administrative rule for forest lands, and the situation we have here is somewhat similar to this in that today we now have a number of counties that are acknowledged, many others that are getting fairly close, and every county has almost gone their own route in terms of dealing with these lands, and LCDC has been approving many of the county plans that have in one way or another recognized transitional lands, and are concerned at this particular time that in attempting to address the problem we may be creating some fairly substantial confusion in the future. At the same time, I think it is recognized that there needs to be some kind of safeguard within the law to recognize this, I think, rather substantial problem that has created some major problems for LCDC from the very outset. I want to spend a few minutes going through with you some of the problems that we see within the bill, and this list is by no means exhaustive, but I just want to touch on a few of them with you. First, on page 2, the definition of marginal lands. One, we feel that there's always a fairly substantial problem when there is an actual indication.
That's just a question. Are you going to turn this into the committee?
I can turn it into the committee. I'm not prepared to at this time, right, but I can within the next few days.
I appreciate that. What I'm asking is that be made available to the committee staff, because I want to go over that after you finished. I want to listen to you, but I don't want to have to. Okay. I want to take that in the document as a whole.
First, I think there are some concerns in putting a dollar figure into a statute when we recognize that from year to year, from property to property, situation to situation, there are rapid up increases and decreases in those values, and a concern over what the impact would be in having this included within the law. Second, the definition of marginal lands includes a test of size of acreage and a percentage of acreage in contiguous ownership, and we recognize at this time that test has not really been applied to the ground anywhere, and that I would be really apprehensive, particularly in dealing with a state as diverse as Oregon, to apply that type of a test onto the ground. I mean, to put anything such as this into statute without having some kind of test to see whether or not it actually works. I want to elaborate on one point that was made on basically applies in the bottom of page 3. I think I've already addressed this, and Hector McPherson also commented on it. I think in view of the fact that the counties are finding ways to deal with this one way or the other, taking my own county as an example, we have anguished over this problem for an extended period of time and have a system that has not yet been acknowledged by LCDC, but one which has received a degree of acceptance within the county, to go through a process of finally achieving some kind of acceptance of a marginal land or transitional land type concept within the county, having that approved by LCDC, and then having some different rules and regulations within the state law, and having to turn right around and rewrite all of this shortly after our plan is acknowledged, not only would be a tremendous burden to the county, but would create, I think, a great deal of concern on the part of a constituency
within
the county.
Doesn't this just apply? This comes into effect at the first review, though, right?
That's correct. But nonetheless, the citizenry within a county is looking for some kind of certainty in this process. If we go through the process that we have evolved at this point and they have to turn around and change it after acknowledgement, then we are losing again the credibility and the certainty that I think the public is really looking for. And I suspect that this will be a problem that will be fairly universal throughout the state where this type of concept has been used. Senator McPherson, on page 4, the bill provides for the utilization of lot of record or modification of the lot of record as it applies to the marginal lands. The particular package that we will be giving to you tonight includes within it a proposal to modify the lot of record bill as it applies to EFU land, because our general experience with the lot of record bill as it was passed in the last session of the legislature, this is a statewide experience, has been that virtually no properties have actually met the lot of record test that was passed at that time. In our county, we have approved one lot since the bill was passed. At a meeting of county planning directors held in January, we inventoried those present out of 18 county planning directors that were there. I think we came up with a total of 5 or 6 lots that actually had met that test. Now, that's not a detailed survey, but it is symptomatic of the fact that the lot of record bill as it passed really had very little utility. On page 5, I just wanted to make one point. On the bottom of page 5, the deletion of churches and schools from the EFU classification. One suggestion that I might make to you, and one thing that we have done in our county fairly recently, and again at the suggestion of Hector McPherson initially, was to make expansions of existing churches and schools to continue to permit those on an outright basis, but recognizing that perhaps new facilities might be conditional, but at least to make expansions of existing facilities an outright type of use. And this is a practice which we have been utilizing in our county now for about 2 years. On page 7, the discussion again, the comments I would have with regard to item A on the top of page 7 are very similar to those that we made earlier in talking about marginal lands, and that is the income test, again, is something which, because of rapid fluctuations, may be very difficult to deal with. Comments with regard to aggregate facilities, I think, have been fairly well carried out today, but I would point out that it is becoming almost impossible for a county under the present rules to approve aggregate facilities because the tests have become so severe. Aggregate is a resource as much as agriculture is a resource, needs some type of protection and consideration within the law. And to make the test even tougher than it has been, when it's virtually impossible now to approve them, I think is questionable. I think other major point, one of two other major points that I would like to make is on page 11, the creation of a panel, 3 to 5 member panel of agricultural people to review agricultural uses without any kind of an appeal. It should be pointed out that a number of sessions ago, the county and city enabling legislation for planning was modified to make planning commissions diverse, requiring no more than 2 members out of any occupation or group to be a member of a commission. What concerns me in this particular instance is if we have create through legislation a panel of agricultural people to review agricultural use, this may very well be a precedent which you may receive from a variety of other groups of people who would would like the same type of protection in their particular case. And I think the Planning Commission law, which was modified a number of years ago to provide that type of diversity, is really, I think, appropriate in this area. And I still would point out that it's very likely that that decision-making, even though it is a quasi-judicial process, is still very much would be in a political arena. The last comment that, with regard to the provisions that you have in front of you, deals with the land division portion of the proposal on the last part of the pages, which would require partitions to go through a kind of review that is available in statute for subdivisions at this particular time. I would submit to you, and I think some of the people that are up here with me can comment on this a little more detail than I can, that approval of a partition and approval of a subdivision are really not the same things, and to go back through with a process of reviewing partitions in the same way that we can with subdivisions, I think there might be, certainly I think would be appropriate for you to have some type of legal determination as to whether or not that would be appropriate. At this point, I'll turn it over to my colleagues to carry this out further.